There's still negative stereotypes about the old moonshiners in the Appalachian region, but making and selling moonshine was often crucial to putting food on the table.
Didn't make too much, but they made enough that the family could survive. And we lived on the farm, and we farmed too, and we survived.
Whiskey, that's how they got by. That's a lot better than letting our families go hunger and starve.
I'm Sarah McConnell, and today on With Good Reason, shining a light on moonshine.
My daddy, he made whiskey. My granddaddy, he did too.
When Julia Maggard began thinking about research topics for her honors seminar at the University of Virginia's College at Wise, she was drawn to the story of moonshining in southwestern Virginia. Having roots in that area, she interviewed children of moonshiners from the 1940s era. What she found was that moonshining was often a crucial economic supplement for families. Julia, tell me about the part of Appalachia where you grew up and where your great-grandfather was a moonshiner.
I grew up in southwestern Virginia, the coal fields of the Appalachian Mountains, where a lot of coal camps were nestled in the hollers, and many people made their money off of coal. Growing up, we always heard stories about moonshining and, you know, how it affected many of the people there. A lot of them were just that, just stories. And I wanted to reach out and make those tangible so that we can actually hear those stories from people who lived it.
Had you heard family stories about your great-grandfather's moonshining?
I heard about how he would sell to family and friends and people throughout the community, but he actually stopped moonshining when he founded a church.
Tell me about your great-grandfather. What was his name, and had he come from a long line of moonshiners?
Well, they all called him Mac. You know, he was very, very a straightforward person. You know, he kind of believed that life was like a tree. You were like a leaf. You're here, you play your part, and then you're gone. And there's nothing more than that. So he utilized moonshining to just allow him and his other family members, his kids. I believe he had 16 children. He wanted to keep those leaves alive, and through the moonshining, he was able to do that.
He had 16 children.
You
just never hear about that these days.
No, this was quite a long time ago. My grandfather was, I believe he was 75 when he passed. He was the oldest of the 16 children. So my great-grandfather was born, my goodness, probably sometime in the late 1800s.
Had he always been a moonshiner, or did he have another profession also?
He was a farmer. Many people throughout the region were small farmers. They didn't make a whole lot of crops, very small plots of land, mainly subsistence farming. But a lot of times, if there was a bad crop, or even if, you know, there was great crop, but the price was too low, they'd have to utilize moonshining in order to get enough money to survive.
So you interviewed a number of people who had parents who were moonshiners. Did you interview anybody who was a moonshiner themselves?
I did. We'll call him Jim. Jim was a runner. And basically what a runner means is that he takes the moonshine from the hidden places in the forest and in the hollers and takes them to the buyers and gets a fee for bringing that from the hiding places to the consumer. There was an intense camaraderie in the moonshining community in that region. And Jim, a rum runner from that region, gives us a fantastic example of the brotherhood that occurred between these men.
There was this man, they're kind of neighbors, you know, and he had a bunch of whiskey made, and he got in bad shape. And he couldn't get out and sell it, and he's needing to be operated on. They all bunched up and put it in the wagon, and
they all helped him.
Yeah, and they hauled it off for him and sold it so he could get his operation.
Was there kind of a sense of community about the moonshine? You know, you take care of each other.
Well, yeah, it did.
He said to me that day, there wasn't anybody who was going to stop us. It was very touching to see an 85-year-old man sitting across from me recalling helping to save the life of one of his friends and those tears standing in his eyes.
Share with me some of the other stories that you came across. It must have been remarkable.
It was. One of the misconceptions about moonshiners is that they made a wealthy profit off of their product. But what actually occurred was those that made the moonshine itself would sell it to neighbors and friends. And many neighbors and friends didn't have very much money to spend on the product. So they would only be able to charge just enough to help make ends meet. Poverty even reached the soles of these people's feet. One of the sons of a moonshiner described how they would put the cardboard in the soles of their shoes to keep the rocks from coming up between the holes.
We got one pair of shoes a year. If they got holes in them, we would find some stuff that had leather or rubber or something and put in our shoe to cover the hole so we wouldn't be walking on the gravels. I put cardboard in mine before, and the cardboard would do pretty good if it wasn't raining. But if it was raining, it'd get wet, and that hole would come right back in there, and you'd have, I mean, you know, he was walking on the ground.
How ingenious were their efforts to hide the stills they made?
To hide the still and successfully get whiskey to and from the woods like that was incredibly hard work. They would have to assemble the entire still, which is hundreds of pounds, in a remote area with running water. They would have to cut down birch wood in that very location due to the fact that birch wood smokes very, very little. So smoke was often the reason moonshiners were detected and prosecuted. And they would have to move the still every two runs in order to maintain its secrecy.
How long is a run?
A run takes about, for normal stuff that you don't age, it's about a few days. But if you age it, you can age it 2 weeks. You can even age it a month and then move it before they were able to do another run. Now, that doesn't include the 15 barrels of mash and of things that they would have to pour into the still in order to produce the whiskey. It was very difficult work. But these were very hardworking and tough people. They faced a lot of odds and tried to prevail in the only way they knew how.
But sort of like with drug running, a negative stereotype is the idea that they had guns and they'd defend their stills. Did you hear about that?
I did. But in the small community in which they were in, many of the revenuers were friends.
The revenuers are the government agents after them?
Yes. Revenuers were the ones paid to track them down. And many would become friends through whiskey exchanges. And they would say, well, you know, we'll keep you stocked on moonshine if you let us know a couple days ahead of time when you're going to be checking around. And oftentimes they would. There was this one revenuer, though, that always told my great-grandfather, I'll get you one day. And he always said to watch his back because he said, I'm going to get you one day, Mac.
You also interviewed the daughter of a moonshiner.
Yeah. The daughter of a moonshiner described his illegal activity as being something that was always kept away from them.
Do you remember any conversations with your mom about moonshiner, or was it always something real distant from you guys?
It was distant from us. He had a big wagon and a pretty team of horses, and off he'd go. He'd tell Mom, I'll be back after a while now.
Moonshine became a medicinal item for them to use when their kids had fevers or when they were developing a sore throat. Especially in that region, they didn't have money or access to a lot of the modern medical advances. So even going to the doctor was something you really could not afford. Because if you think about families today, if one kid gets a cold or a flu, almost all of the children get it. You can't afford to send 7 children to the doctor. You just had to make do with what you could. And moonshine was an inexpensive, relatively inexpensive item to utilize to help stem a fever or ease a sore throat.
Would they mix it with stuff?
Well, one of the moonshiner's sons actually told me about a drink called a hot toddy that his father would make. And he would put cinnamon sticks and those cherry candies and boil them in moonshine and add a little bit of water and make them drink it when they had a fever and make them go straight to bed. And sure enough, the next day they'd sweat it out.
You know, it's so funny. Nowadays, we have all these artisanal distilleries and craft beer houses and vineyards, and people love it and admire the craftsmanship and the differences in the recipes. I wonder if you came to think, you know, moonshining is like that. Too bad they couldn't have enjoyed the open-air admiration from people about their craft.
Absolutely. Moonshining was somewhat of an art form. The process was very intricate. They'd put in the birch bark and give it this like woodsy flavor. Yeah. So they were artisans in and of themselves, despite the fact that they were also outlaws.
Did you have a different feeling about this part of your heritage when you were growing up? Were you more conflicted when you were young, but have come to a different sort of admiration for it now?
I was very conflicted about moonshining in my family's past. I knew that it was something that was illegal, and I didn't agree with the consumption of alcohol in excess. So I always saw it as this black mark on our family history. But when I came to study how it was so necessary for their survival, I became almost proud of the fact that they did it, because it was their tool to take care of their kids and their way of taking no help or as little help as possible to take care of their family.
Have you been getting a lot of interest from people now that you've done this research?
I have. People are beginning to ask more questions about moonshining as a whole and are beginning to drop some of the generalizations about it. I find it so interesting how when you take history and you listen to it from the mouth of someone who lived it, it comes to life and it gives you a brand new perspective on what actually happened.
My daddy